For those of you who don't know me, I'm Andrew, as I said, married to a beautiful wife, Bronwyn. She's out serving in our kids area this morning in our Sunbeams room, and she's passionate about working with babies. She loves babies. My affectionate name for her is the Baby Whisperer. That she can put any baby to sleep. I've never seen her not be able to put a baby to sleep, including my own. The reason I say that is because last week we were visiting family friends of ours who just had their first child. They just got home from hospital a couple of hours before we saw them. It was amazing to go see them, see this tiny little newborn. I did manage to get a hold of the baby. I managed to just get a couple of minutes hold in between my wife holding the little baby. And as I was holding him, this little boy, it brought back memories from when I had our first kid in the hospital. And not me, but I was holding him in the hospital. The first time I held him, my son, my older son's now 10, so it's a whole decade ago, and holding him in hospital, the nurses had said to me, look, he's a bit cold, put him underneath your shirt and warm him up. And I thought, oh, okay, I can do that. So under the shirt, and I'm sitting there holding him, probably would have been for about half an hour or so just by myself, running, what am I doing? What can I have? I have no idea what I'm doing. I've just been told to do this. I don't know what to do next. I honestly don't know really what I'm doing. I'm not much of a baby person, so this was a whole new experience for me, and I don't know if you can relate to me in that regard. Maybe it was the first child in your family. Maybe it's another situation where you've just been standing there, and it's just been dawned on you, like, I don't actually know what to do next. I just don't know. Someone's going to have to tell me. Or I'm going to have to try and figure it out all by myself. I just don't know what I'm doing. Well, that was me in that situation in the hospital. But I think that sometimes is our experience in life, isn't it? We only get one life to live. Often we face things that we don't know how to get through. We don't know how to deal with. Maybe we have too many choices. Maybe we have too many choices. We actually just don't know what to choose. We're paralyzed by choice. Perhaps it brings us to having fear of choosing the wrong choice, so we don't choose anything, and we just sort of stagnate, don't want to move forward because we're afraid to choose the wrong thing, and maybe we feel anxiety about not knowing where to go, not knowing what to do, what path to take. And as we look at our series on wisdom over the next month, hopefully we can give you some tools that'll help you navigate life, help you choose wise paths, make decisions wisely. Now, I've got a number on the screen behind me here, and it's going to be up each week as we look through our month on wisdom. Does anyone know what it represents, just out of curiosity? Any ideas? I had a couple of conversations with people this morning about this number. Well, that's a really good answer. A number of times wisdom is mentioned in the Bible. This is not a biblical number at all, so that was a great shot. It's a pretty ordinary number. There we go, we got it. How many minutes in a day? Thank you, Jerry. That was exactly. It's the number of minutes in a day. I was wondering if someone would recognize that. Number of minutes in a day. Why have we got that as the holding slide that you'll see over the next month? Well, for me, I think a minute is all you really need to make a good decision. Once you've weighed up everything, once you have all the information, once you've looked into everything, really all it takes is a minute to make a great decision. And it's all about making the most of what God has given us, our time here on earth. We have so many minutes in every day. Think how many great decisions we can make when we have the right tools available to us, when we have the courage to step out, knowing the battle's won, which we just sung about. When we look at wisdom in the Bible, when we look at how to be wise, what actually is that? And I was thinking about this, what does it actually mean to be wise? Who is someone that I think is wise? What is about them that makes them wise? Is it their gray hair? What actually is it about someone that makes them wise? One of my co-workers I work with, we often have some great conversations. He's an avid learner in the arts of forging. For those of you who don't know what that is, it's taking a hunk of metal, melting it down, and banging it with a hammer and shaping it into all sorts of different things. So often I'll see him at lunchtime on the YouTube watching people hammer out stuff in a forge. And we have some great conversations about it. Now, he is wise in the arts of forging. He's made his own forge at home and he does his own forging. I am not. So the conversation sort of goes, hey, do you know how to make this? And he's like, yeah, sure. So you bang it this way, you hit it that way, you pull it out, you quench it, and the conversation will go on forever. One of the things about being wise is actually just knowing how to do something, knowing what to do, which I think is pretty self-explanatory in some ways. But it sort of boils down into two things, though. It's not just knowing what to do. It's actually thinking the right things first. So wisdom, I think, is thinking, and then it's acting. So it's knowing the right thought process to go to, but then if you don't act on that thought process in the correct way, then you're going to make an unwise decision. And we're going to look at Solomon in the Bible. He's a great example of this, this principle of thinking and acting. And Solomon, when we look at the Bible, is actually, well, he's quite a wise guy in some ways. And perhaps one of the more well-known characters. He's the third king of Israel, son of King David. And God actually appears to him. And Solomon actually asks for wisdom in how to rule his kingdom. And I thought that was pretty cool. Because out of all the things you would want as a king, I would have thought power, authority, lots of followers, a big army, all these sort of things would be pretty high up on the list. Wisdom, well, if you've got a big enough army, then you probably don't need to be that wise. As long as your army's bigger than someone else's, you're probably going to be okay. But he asked for wisdom. That was the thing he asked for. And God was like, wow, that is amazing. You'll be the wisest person. I'll make you wise. And you will have all these things as well. It's not long after that that we see Solomon confronted with an interesting problem. He has two women that come to him with a problem. These two women lived in the same house. They each had a child. Tragically, one morning they woke up, there was only one child alive. Both women claimed that the living child was theirs. Quite a sad situation. They come before the king not able to resolve this situation, this argument that they were having. They both claimed that this child was theirs. And we see here Solomon does something really wise in his thought process. He tries to determine the truth from the lie in this situation. So he says, okay, bring me a sword. I'm going to cut the child in half. You can have half each if you can't decide. Now, I don't think for a moment he was actually going to cut this child in half at all. I don't think for a moment that was his intention. The commandments that he follows say, do not murder. It's pretty clear. So I don't think as a king he would do that in his courtroom. But this sword he was using as a tool to determine the deeper motive behind what was happening. He was trying to determine the truth from the lie in this situation. And of course, when he says this, the mother of the child says, okay, you can have the child. I'd prefer him to live than for him to die. And so this tool that Solomon used actually determined the deeper motive behind the situation. And I think that's probably one of the first principles when it comes to making wise decisions. He's actually looking at the situation, thinking, well, these both look good, but what is actually the best choice? And why is it the best choice? Because one of these options is lying to me. Now, take for quite a mundane example. I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but sometimes I catch myself speeding to work or to where I want to go because I'm running late. I might sleep in. I don't know if that's anyone else here, but that sometimes I catch myself doing this. Now, someone said to me once, it was a wise person who said this. They were like, do you know what? Jesus is more interested in your character than anything else. And every time you speed, you're actually shortcutting the process that Jesus has given you to learn character. See, if you just slowed down, did the speed limit, got to work late, and apologized, then you're actually allowing yourself to learn from that situation. Of course, if you keep doing that, you're probably going to lose your job. That might be another learning experience. But Jesus is actually interested in your character formation. So when I see myself in that situation, I think to myself, okay, I've got a choice to make here. Both of these things appear quite good. I can speed to work. I can get to work on time. That's good because I don't have to confront my boss, or my boss doesn't have to confront me about being late. That's great. But what's also great is actually building character and learning from my mistakes. These are both good, but one's lying to me, isn't it? The choice to speed, that's lying to me. That's presenting itself as good, but it's actually the lie. Actually, what's important is Jesus actually developing character in me and in you. And so the first principle of making wise decisions is just to determine the truth from a lie. Sometimes that's easier, sometimes that's harder. Of course, what goes with Solomon's life, we see a little bit later on. You know, he's got this good thought process, determining truth from lies, but sometimes he just doesn't act on that. Sometimes he's got the knowledge, he fails to act on it. And we see not long after in 1 Kings chapter 11 that the Bible tells us that he's so wealthy, he's so famous, he meets so many people from around the world that he's starts to marry all these women from other countries. And the Bible tells us that he started setting up shrines to other gods of these foreign people in his own country. So that, well, I guess perhaps his thought process was, oh, I'll let them worship the god that they were worshiping. But the Bible tells us that he also decided to start worshiping these other gods. And we see the chapter after that in 1 Kings 12 that God actually appears to Solomon and is very angry with him. And he says, look, for the sake of your father David, I'm not going to take the kingdom away from you. I'll take it away from your son, Rehoboam. And so from there on, we see Israel split in half because of Solomon's poor choice. He had a good thought process, but he didn't act on it. He didn't act wisely on it. I don't know about you, but sometimes things aren't as black and white as that. Sometimes things are a little bit more grey. Sometimes we're presented with situations where we can't determine what is the best choice. So what do we do in those situations? What do we do when it seems that both of these things in front of us are good, or both of these things in front of us are difficult, and nothing seems to be standing out? God seems to be silent, maybe. He doesn't seem to be revealing to you the choice you should be making. Now, over here we have Proverbs 3, verse 5 and 6. It says, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not depend on your own understanding. Seek his will in all you do, and he will show you which path to take. I believe in these gray areas of our life, I believe this is a key to making wise decisions. Now, there's two words in there, trust and seek. These are quite active words, but sometimes we think they're a little bit more passive than active. There's a great saying going around, let go and let God. And there's a website called the Babylon Bee. Some of you may read it. It's a satirical website, right? Satire. And they did an article on there of a rock climber that he was halfway up and he's like, I don't know if I can go. I'm just going to let go and let God. I'm going to trust in him. And of course, that didn't end very well for the rock climber. In some situations, trust is actually an active thing we have to actually do. It's not a passive thing where we stand back and do nothing. Sometimes doing nothing is a choice that it actually denies God power and purpose in our life. I'll say it again. Doing nothing is a choice that denies God's power and purpose in your life. I think that's really important to understand. That actually trusting God is an active thing. Now, I had a situation similar to this, a grey area where I was trying to sort of determine what I was going to do. Both the things in front of me looked pretty good. Before I came to England, I've been here about 5 years. But prior to that, I was ministering into another church. Had left that church and I was sort of wondering what I was going to do. And I was unsure. I was really unsure what I was going to do. I didn't know if I would ever work in a church again. Hadn't left the previous church in a very good state. And I was questioning, what am I going to do, God? What am I going to do? I'd been out of ministry for about 2 years. which is a decent amount of time. And in that time, I'm sort of starting to wonder, well, am I finished in that regard? Are you not going to lead me into another church? Am I going to find something else to do? Now, for those of you who don't know, I love coffee. So coffee's one of those things. I bought a coffee machine at the beginning of the year, and it's been wonderful. I have drunk many good coffees from that machine. It saved me a lot of money, perhaps. I don't know if it's paid for itself yet, but I'm working on it every day. But I got to the point in my life where I need to do something. I need to make a choice. And I thought, well, I love coffee. I have a passion for it. Why don't I start up a cafe? And so I started talking with a business partner about that, and we started making plans. And it was during this period where these are quite different diverging paths in front of me. What am I going to do? I need to make a decision. And during this process, there was a couple of things that I learned. One was to surrender my own ambitions. Surrendering is one of those things where I had to sort of lay on the line my heart, what I wanted to do, what I felt God wanted me to do, what my own gifts and talents are. I had to put them in front of Jesus and say, you know what? I give it to you. It still brings up a little bit of emotion for me, this season of my life. The second thing I needed to do was to actually make a choice with humility, to actually be prepared to make a choice and to fail, and to be humble enough to be like, okay, I'm going to make this choice, but I'm prepared to be wrong about it. I'm prepared to fail. I'm prepared to switch gears if I make the wrong choice. And I think that's a really important thing we need to make, need to decide to do. If we're looking at a decision which it doesn't seem to be a right or a wrong. Some things are only wise in hindsight, aren't they? We look back and we're like, oh, okay, that wasn't a really wise decision. It's not working. Let's change. Let's make another choice. Let's make the other choice that we have before us. It's never too late. God's grace is always upon us each and every new day that we have. The third thing that I learned in this season was when I'm facing a choice, I actually need community around me to make that choice. It's not just me. I actually need people around me. You actually need people around you. Whether that's pressing into a home group, whether it's finding a mentor who's been there before you, whether it's chatting to a close friend who's actually honest enough to say, do you know what, Andrew, you actually don't make a great coffee every day. You're actually not as good as you think you are. Perhaps you need a close friend that can actually give you that feedback, can actually help you make that choice, can actually help you discern God's will for your life. And of course, the fourth thing I learned in this season of my life was I actually needed to draw near to God. This wasn't a place I was in where I had to lean on my own understanding. I actually needed to draw near to God. I actually needed to come closer to Him. I had to increase my trust in Him. And as I discovered this, in this season I was in, I discovered a number of things. I discovered how much God actually trusts me, how much He actually believes in me, how much He actually believes in you to do what He's called you to do here, where you're planted. And I discovered that while I was worshiping one day, I was worshiping at Church Sands Christian Fellowship, and an amazing place. I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for them. But as I'm worshiping there one morning, I'm asking all these questions, as you do when you're in that season of your life. But as I was worshiping, God sort of spoke to me out of the blue, and He's like, do you know what? Inglewood's your mission field. Inglewood's your mission field. Just go there. And I was like, oh, okay, that's pretty direct. I had not really much knowledge about Inglewood, but I have a family connection here. My grandmother still attends here, Marge Sobey. And so I just rocked up. And of course, things happen after that. But in a season of making decisions, when there's something in front of you, these four things, I believe, are keys. We need to trust God, which allows us to surrender our own ambition, our own ideas. We need to trust God and act with humility, knowing that he will show us the right path if we will make a choice and allow him to use us. See, because choosing allows God to choose you, to work in you, to work through you. If we do nothing, it denies God that power, that purpose in your life. And of course, we need to seek God's will in community, with others, with trusted friends, with mentors, with leaders who can speak into your life, encouragement, wise words. And of course, we need to seek God's will and draw close to him. A band's going to come up now as we close our service. But before we close, before we finish, perhaps you're sitting here and you're like, well, Andrew, this is all good, but I've already made that bad decision. I've already stuffed things up and I'm in a place where I don't know where to go forwards because I've already made maybe one, maybe more, maybe many bad choices in my life. But I just want to encourage you today, here in this place, I'm going to give you a minute, perhaps to start making a wise choice, to start making a choice towards Jesus. Maybe for the first time, maybe for the 100th time. But we're going to have a space where you can do that. Because I believe each and every day is new for those who put their trust in Jesus through his grace offered to each and every one of us. Forgiveness, a new start by Jesus' own blood on the cross for each and every one of us. What an amazing thing to think about. It's not something that's worldly, it's otherworldly. A new start each and every day. A new opportunity to learn. A new opportunity to make wise decisions in our lives. So we're just going to close our eyes and we just want to pray. And as I pray, I just want to give you the opportunity. Perhaps you need to make a decision this morning, or perhaps you want to make a decision this morning. Perhaps you need to surrender your own agenda, your own plans, the things you really want, the things you really desire. Perhaps you just actually need to give them over to God in order to see a way through. Perhaps you actually need to humble yourself in this moment and say, you know what, God, I might be wrong. This decision I made might not be the best thing that I've made. Right now, I confess that. Perhaps you're sitting here and you actually just feel alone, even amongst all these people. Perhaps that decision, that situation that you've got is weighing on your heart and you're just feeling alone, isolated. Perhaps you need community. Perhaps you need someone to speak into your life. I ask that you would ask Jesus to give you that person. Maybe you need to make a decision to seek someone out today, this week, and talk to them. Perhaps this morning you need to draw near to God. Perhaps you need to remind yourself of his faithfulness in your life and trust him again. We're going to give you a minute just to sit. Perhaps you need to make a decision this morning. So I'm just going to give you a minute between you and God. Let's just take that time. Father, thank you that each new day is a new day to make a great decision. Each new minute is a minute you've given us. Father, may each of us make the most of that which you've given us, our time. Father, I pray for those here who have decisions they have made this morning. Father, I pray that you would continue to speak into those decisions, that you would continue to make paths straight, make paths clear. But above all else, thank you for your grace upon our life when we do stuff up. Thank you for your forgiveness. Thank you for your love for us. Thank you that you haven't finished with us. Not today, not tomorrow. Not until we get to heaven. Not till we walk down that hallway with those that have gone before us. Thank you for the hope that we have in you, our Savior, our Lord. Amen.